connecting to the AOC Podcast Network. Enjoy your stay.
This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people, places, and culture of Lafayette, Louisiana, the gateway to South Louisiana and the region we know as Acadiana. We focus on the warm joie de vivre, our joy of living, exemplified by our people, the beautiful scenery, delicious food, and cultural traditions passed down generation after generation. There are many reasons people decide to make Lafayette their home. Today's episode features State Representative Nancy Landry, who represents District 31, which covers the southern portion of Lafayette Parish. Elected in 2008, Nancy Landry is a Republican who chairs the Louisiana House Education Committee. She's pro-life, pro-business, pro-Second Amendment, and a very strong advocate for parental choice in public education. Nancy is a lawyer, having graduated from LSU in LSU Law School. And Nancy, you're also the mother of two grown sons who were educated in our public school system.
That's right.
Yeah. So I had you on the show today, and thank you for joining us,
Nancy. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Jana.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you. I wanted to allow people to get to know you better, not only as a public servant, but as a mother, as a community member. And so if we can, I'd like to talk first about your background, where you grew up, which I know you're from here, but if you can talk about your family and your deep roots in Lafayette.
Okay. Well, my family's been here for over 250 years, and I'm proud Cajun heritage. But my dad, he grew up in Baton Rouge. My mother grew up in New Orleans. And my dad's family, though, is originally from Vermilion Parish, from Delcom area. Mm-hmm. And so after he got out of the Navy, we moved to Lafayette, and he set up his orthodontic practice in Lafayette.
Okay.
And so I've been here ever since. Mm-hmm. I moved away briefly in the 90s and came back, and just so happy to be back.
But, right. You've got a beautiful family. I know you're, I know one of your sisters, Kim, but you've got a beautiful family,
set
of siblings.
We have a big family. Thank you.
Yeah.
Big family, big loving family, and I'm real happy to be back around all of my family members again after living in two other states for a brief time.
Right.
It's great to be back.
Yeah. So. Well, I feel like we have some things in common. We met back, I think it was in 2006, 2007, and we were both running for office. Maybe
right.
I was running for the first time, and I know it was so interesting to talk to you as your children were younger. You were balancing work, your desire for public service, being a mother, and trying to make it all work. And can you talk about that, what it was like? You were elected, as I said, in 2008, and it's not that easy running for office, is it?
No, it was a great experience, though. It was really, the first time I ran, I didn't win, if you remember. I ran in 2007, and I lost by 33 votes.
That was painful.
It was very heartbreaking, but it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. And I tell people, other than the birth of my two children, it was really a life-changing experience. And going door-to-door and talking to your community and finding out what's important to them is just, it's life-altering, you know, and it was an amazing experience. And even though I didn't win, it just really, you know, made me want to continue in public service no matter what I did, even if I didn't win the election. But the chance came up for me to run again as the person who beat me resigned 10 months later.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I ran again, and that time, you know, I won. So it is more fun to win, but it was, you know, and you know, it's a great experience to run.
Right.
When else do you get to go knock on people's doors and say, you know, hi, I'm your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Tell me what's important to you. What are your concerns? What, you know, what matters to you? It was really, you know, a blessing to be able to do that. And I encourage everyone who has a heart for public service to run for office because, you know, there's no better way to get in touch with your community and know how special our community is here and
right.
what great people we have and how lucky we are.
We really do. I mean, our people are so resilient. I think it's because of the Acadiana, that you know, the Acadian roots.
Exactly.
And then I moved here 34 years ago, and I can tell you when I moved here from Baton Rouge, the culture difference was shocking.
Right.
I mean, people speaking French and the deep roots of family.
Yeah, we have our own food, our own music, mm-hmm. and our own language. And I think the fact that, you know, we came here after basically, you know, a genocide of our people, I know my ancestors who came here were separated from their family and lost many family members mm-hmm. along the way, and so depended on others to take them in. And I think my great-great-great-great-whatever-grandfather, the first one to come here, was only 14 years old when he got here and had lost his entire family except for a sister-in-law. And so I'm sure he depended on others to take him in mm-hmm. until he was, you know, older and grown up. And everyone who came here in that situation depended on others. And so I think that's where our spirit of taking people in and treating them like family mm-hmm. comes from. And we've hung on to that over, you know, generations and generations. And we still take strangers in and treat them mm-hmm. like family. And that's one thing that people notice when they come here.
They do.
They love that about Lafayette. And
right.
I love that about Lafayette and about our people.
I had Robert Dafford, the mural artist, on a few weeks back, and his story about the expulsion of the Acadians and how he became aware of this in the 80s. It was when he traveled away. He's from Lafayette. And when he traveled, you know, to Greece and other places when he was in the Navy, he didn't realize till he was gone how unique our culture was.
Yeah.
And it inspired him. There was no history really documented at that point in public arenas about the expulsion of the Acadians.
Right. And it's a painful past, but
yeah.
I think it's important for us to remember that that's what happened to us and why we are as special as we
mm-hmm.
are.
So, right.
And why we've preserved our culture.
I think.
So
you're a mother, an attorney. And now a state rep who's focused on education. And Nancy, I've heard you speak before about your own family experiences, one of your sons, and how it really, his experiences ignited a desire to serve, and in particular to improve educational outcomes. So would you maybe give some of your background on that?
Sure. So I went to public schools here in Lafayette, and my children also went to public schools, and I have three stepdaughters in addition to my two sons, and they also went to public schools. So I tell people I've ushered five children through 11 different public schools in three different states, because I briefly lived in the state of Washington and in Texas also. And so, you know, I noticed a really remarkable difference between the school systems here in Louisiana when we moved here from the other states. And we had some good experiences here in the public schools, and we had some not so good experiences. And for example, my oldest son, both my children were in the gifted program, which is just an awesome program. Mm-hmm. And particularly at Lafayette High, we had some of the best teachers in the state, the most inspiring teachers in the state, and they got a great education. And my oldest son now is a software engineer, and he works at Google. Mm-hmm. And so he was able to compete with people from all over the country for one of the best jobs in the country. Mm-hmm. And I consider that a success story. You know,
I think all would.
Yeah, the schools here prepared him to compete for jobs across mm-hmm. the country. And that's an excellent outcome, I think. My other son also had a happy ending, but in the, you know, in elementary school, we had a year that we really struggled with when he was and I think the third grade, he had won the math award in kindergarten and was doing well in school. And then in third grade, he started telling me that he hated math and he was stupid in math and he didn't want to go to school anymore. And it was very, very frustrating as a mother and trying to advocate for my son and find out what was wrong. I met with the teacher. I met with the principal. I met with the gifted and talented coordinator. I talked to my school board member, and I just hit brick wall after brick wall. And it was, you know, it was really heart-wrenching to watch my son wither and nothing could be done to, you know, correct the situation or make anything better. And there were nine other parents who were having the same problems. It wasn't just, you know, us. And some of them were able to take their kids out of public school and put them in private school. And I didn't have that choice. I couldn't afford to put my son in private school, and I couldn't afford to homeschool him because I was a single mother mm-hmm. and I had to work. And so I just had to watch him through the whole year just, you know, wither. And it was very, very painful year for him and for me as a mother. And, you know, it was because of lack of choices. We didn't have a choice. We didn't have another option. We couldn't change schools. There were no schools of choice then, I don't think. So we made it through that year. It was rough, but we made it through. And he had a lot of gaps in his math knowledge after that. But he eventually was able to close those gaps through the years. And in high school, he used, excuse me, Khan Academy, which mm-hmm. is an online.
It's excellent.
It's a great service and free. And he was able to close all the gaps in his math education. And he did end up winning like the state calculus rally mm-hmm. award in high school. And he's still in college, but he's also majoring in computer engineering. Mm-hmm. And our story had a happy ending because, you know, he turned out okay and everything mm-hmm. turned out fine, even though we had that rough year. But it made me start thinking about, you know, this was an A-rated school in a B-rated district. And, you know, what were other parents going through if they were in, mm-hmm. you know,
underperforming schools
in underperforming districts? Mm-hmm. And could this be happening to them year after year or with multiple children at one time? And, you know, my heart went out to them. And I just thought that, you know, parents should have choices. They should be able to. All parents should be able to do what parents with the resources have mm-hmm. to do. And I know lots of parents who have one child in the public school and one child in private school, and they switch them around. They do what they need to do mm-hmm. to meet that child's needs, and they recognize that their children are not the same. All children are not the same, even their own children.
Right.
Siblings have different needs and need to go to different schools, but parents without the resources don't have those options, and it's just not fair. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons I decided to run for office. And it is the reason why it became a passion for me once I was elected. And I have been working as an elected official to provide choices mm-hmm. for parents and make sure that every child has access to an opportunity for a good education mm-hmm. and regardless of their zip code. And so it's also one of the reasons that I wanted to be chairman of the House Education Committee and why I just have a passion for it now. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, there's nothing more important to a child's ultimate success than their education experience. And to deny the opportunity to some kids simply because of where they live is mm-hmm. unconscionable. And we wouldn't tolerate that with any other service for our children. We wouldn't tolerate that. We wouldn't say you have to choose your doctor based on your zip code or your dentist based on your zip code. But we somehow accept that that's mm-hmm. okay when we talk about something as important as education.
Right.
And I just think that's wrong, and we need to change that mindset.
I do want to say I've had my children, and they're older now, but in private school, and that can happen in any school system. We had something similar happen, and that third and fourth grade year is critical, not only in the child's confidence, but the base that they're laying. And we had a similar thing happen with my youngest. And there's no feeling like being desperate, wanting your child to get the education that, not just that they deserve, but it that's what defines people. If you don't get an adequate education, it just affects every aspect of your life. And no matter what your resources, but I know in particular what you're saying, after experiencing that, I also was active in civic work, and to think of the untold numbers of kids that fall through the cracks,
right?
You know, year after year, it's
heartbreaking. Once they get that mindset that they're dumb in math or that they're not stupid, they don't like school, it can really alter their lives.
It affects everything, your confidence
exactly.
and your abilities. So you were elected, and from your first, I guess your first term, were you put on the House Education Committee?
No, at first I wasn't. I was on civil law and natural resources.
Well, that's not
bad. I moved. I loved civil law. I'm one of the nerds who likes civil law.
Keeps you current with the laws.
A lot of people don't like serving on that committee because it's pretty technical. Mm-hmm. But I just loved it. But in 2012, I started serving on the House Education Committee, and that's the year that we started enacting some bold reforms. and we allowed more charter schools mm-hmm. to more pathways for charter schools to open up doors and provide more choices for parents. And we also expanded the scholarship program so that children could go to private school if mm-hmm. they were zoned for a D or an F school. They were living in poverty, they qualified to get a scholarship mm-hmm. to go to a private school if a private school was participating in the scholarship program in their area. And we also passed some other sweeping changes to early childhood education and mm-hmm. Some other, you know, right. reforms. And we had already passed the teacher evaluation laws before that, but mm-hmm. but it was some pretty bold and sweeping changes, and it was there was enormous opposition to it. It was not easy to pass, but we've seen now the results mm-hmm. coming in now, the changes that have happened, and it's just been amazing. We really have upped the game, and we're providing mm-hmm. more opportunities for more kids, particularly more kids of color and kids living in poverty, right. minority students.
I remember 2012 in particular. It's hard to believe it's been 5 years, but you're being understated saying that it was a tough year. I mean, that was almost like a bomb went off, because it wasn't about the choice so much, but just rocking the status quo. And I agree with you. I think most people, anybody wants their own child to have the best options, and the fight that went on to allow all children to have a choice, you know, if it's needed, I think was it was a profound change in the direction of public education.
Absolutely.
In the state of Louisiana.
And the local school systems are a major employer in 60 out of 64 parishes, mm-hmm. I think. And so there's enormous resistance to change. And a lot of the school systems are adult-focused and focused on the jobs they provide and the benefits for the adults. And, you know, what we've been doing is trying to turn it to make it student-focused mm-hmm. and focused on academic achievement of students. It's really hard to do, though. I mean, people don't like change. They resist change. And, you know, this is the way we've always done it. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, very hard.
It was good enough for me.
It's
yeah.
very hard to yeah. overcome that.
Yeah.
But we've made some enormous strides, and we're continuing to fight to provide better opportunities for children in our states.
So. Right, right. So you focus on statewide in your role as a representative. But what about locally? Are you involved? I saw you recently at an education committee at the One Acadiana offices. And does your work take you around the state? Are you able to see the best and the not so good, the school districts that need to improve, or do you
focus
on certain regions of the state?
My job as state representative is mostly focused in Baton Rouge and the work that we do at the legislature and the legislation that we pass. I, as you know, it's a part-time job, and so, you know, mm-hmm. I also have obligations, you know, for my other job, and so I don't get to spend a whole lot of time when we're not in session doing legislative work. But you know, I have been involved a little bit, not a whole lot on mm-hmm. on local issues, but mostly what I do is in Baton Rouge and on the state level and mm-hmm. the state policy and shaping state policy.
Right.
But I do hear from, you know, we have a lot of people come and testify mm-hmm. at the committee from all over the state.
So you get to see kind of the regions.
Exactly.
I did Leadership Louisiana a few years back in 2014, and I had the pleasure of meeting Hollis Milton, who is the West Feliciana Superintendent of Schools, West Feliciana Parish. And Hollis oversees a school system where about 97% of the kids are in public schools. And I was fascinated by that because they're one of the top school systems in the state, and he's been serving as head of the Superintendent Association statewide. And I looked at West Feliciana, where they have the Leader in Me, most of the kids are in public school, and compared it to Lafayette Parish, where we have a very high percentage of private school kids in our parish. Maybe 25 to 30% of the kids go to private school here. And I was just fascinated with the differences, but it's just a different dynamic completely. So we've got a lot of the parents here that are focused on their own private, you know, where their kids go to private school, And then we have the big public school system that still needs volunteers and resources and focus. And so I've enjoyed getting to know more about the other parts of our state, because you can really learn what works and what doesn't just by watching others, right, and not just looking at your own backyard.
Right.
So I'm sure
and
you've
seen
a lot of that.
Every parish is different. Every system is different, you know, and so that there, like I said, there's no one size fits all. There's
right.
no magic bullet to fix our public education woes. Just providing the opportunity for innovation is something that we strive for in education reform, because if you provide the opportunity for innovation, then, you know, innovation will happen and people will follow. And try to duplicate what people are doing that works. And
right.
so that's really the goal. There's no magic bullet. There's nothing that's going to solve all the problems. Having charter schools isn't going to solve the problems, but it does provide an opportunity for kids who are trapped in a failing school to have a choice and an opportunity to go somewhere else and escape from a bad situation. But we've seen, you know, New Orleans is completely different too. They have a lot of high private school percentage there as well. And I think, you know, part of that is from our Catholic background. And
it is,
you know,
definitely
a lot of,
the parochial emphasis.
Right. A lot of parents, you know, want their children to have the Catholic education. And so we have that history in South Louisiana in particular of a high percentage of students in private schools. But we've seen huge gains in the New Orleans area. I mean, we have almost 100% charter school now. They have what's called a portfolio system there, where they still have the school board, and the school board oversees everything, but each school operates as an independent charter school with an independent board. And then the overall, everything's overseen by the Orleans Parish School Board.
And that was post-Katrina, that emphasis, right, on, or was that before that, Katrina?
Well, before Katrina, the Recovery School District had already taken over some of the F-rated schools there, and they had a lot of failing schools in the New Orleans area. And after Katrina, things sort of accelerated because of all the change going on there. But it's now, I think, 100% charter schools.
I didn't realize that. And they're doing well.
They were just returned last year from the Recovery School District back to the local school board to govern them. And so far, everything's going well. And you know, they still have the autonomy to run independently.
And then the school board is the umbrella overseeing, I guess, transportation,
right,
or
some of the
budget,
you know, common the budget, the common needs of all the schools. And but they have an application process there called One App, where parents can apply in one place for the school that they want to go to. They get to pick, you know, first choice, second choice, third choice, and then they're, you know, assigned the school based on their choices. And sometimes everyone wants to go to a certain one, and they'll have to get their second choice. But they have a system to work all that out. And parents seem to be much more engaged. When you give parents choices and they actually get to, you know, research and choose the school that their children go to, they're much more likely to be involved in the school and to volunteer their time and to, you know, feel some ownership in their child's education, and the children too. And so we've seen really good results there and some enormous gains in the New Orleans area. And that's a model that that other states are looking at. It's called the portfolio model, and it's happening in a few other cities, major cities around the country as well.
I may be putting you on the spot here, but I know that you're working now with a nonprofit. If you want to tell us about that, and I wanted to hear about maybe best practices before we move on, if you've seen nationally areas that, you know, maybe one or two things that really work that we could look at in Louisiana, if you've got any thoughts on that.
Well, actually, Louisiana is one of the places where nationally we are a model, and people are looking at what we've done here, because we've, you know, the reforms that we passed in 2012 were pretty bold and huge, and other states have struggled to pass the same type of reforms through their legislature. And so when we travel as legislators to other seminars or summits on education, people are always like, oh, you're from Louisiana. How did you pass those major reforms?
Yeah.
and all eyes in the country are on us right now and watching what we've done with our our reforms from 2012 that provide more pathways for charter schools, our expansion of our charter program. And even before that, the Recovery School District was mm-hmm. pretty major, and other states have duplicated that as well. The takeover, when you have a school that's been failing for years and years and years, and it's just, you know, not fair to the children that are zoned mm-hmm. there, that are basically going to a pipeline to prison. It allows a mechanism for the state to take over the school and, you know, change the course of it and mm-hmm. try to, you know, save it or turn it over to a charter operator to just completely, you know, change the way that it's run to help try to, you know, yeah. save the opportunity for the children that are attending there.
And those are still considered public schools, even though they're run by private operators.
Right, they are, and charter schools public are monies. Public schools as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we are a model. Other states are, you know, are trying to enact the reforms that we enacted. They're trying to do what we've done, but there are some states that have gone a step further and enacted something called education savings accounts, which allow the money, the tax money for education, to follow the child. And it's sort of like the money's in a backpack on mm-hmm. the child's back, if you can think of it that way. So wherever the parents want the child to get an education where they think the child is going to be best served, the tax money goes with the child and follows the child to the choice that the parents choose. And it's a little bit innovative. It's different from scholarships because, for example, parents of special needs students can use it for alternative treatments for their child. Like children who have autism, they can use it for you know, special mm-hmm. Therapies and things that aren't available at private schools or public schools. And the money is allowed to be used for that as well. And a couple of states have passed universal education savings accounts, and that's going to completely change the landscape of their public education because the money goes with the child.
Even to private school?
Even to private schools that participate. Then the schools all have to compete for that money, and mm-hmm. they have to compete to get the parent to choose them. And
so that raises the standards, huh?
Exactly. And they're focused more on the needs of the children and the academic achievement of the children and convincing the parents that, mm-hmm. you know, their school's going to meet their child's needs. And so you have, you know, the focus turning towards the children mm-hmm. and the academic achievement of the children.
So it's more like a private business being run as far as you look at outcomes and
it's just
know,
more like
of
well,
success.
It's like the GI Bill. Mm-hmm. The GI Bill, you get money to go to college, and you take that money, you mm-hmm. can go wherever you want, wherever it's best going to meet your needs. Mm-hmm. And it's the same sort of idea there. It's like, right. you know, if you want the education savings account money and you want that child, then you have to prove that you're mm-hmm. going to serve that child's needs and meet that child's needs and provide a good education
right.
for them.
Right.
So it's that sort of idea. It's like, you know, it's not restricting it to a government-run school. Mm-hmm. It's giving the parents choices between a government-run school or a private one and whatever is best for that child. And,
right.
and that, I think, is, you know, a better mm-hmm. system. Everyone kind of rises up. And the studies show that, you know, when you have scholarship opportunities and choices for parents, eventually they all rise up. And the ones, even the schools that lost students to some of those programs end up improving mm-hmm. the opportunities for everyone who stayed because they're rising to the challenge.
Right, right. Well, thank you for all your service in education. I've kind of had a couple of questions going through my head about your service as a state rep. What is it like being a state representative? Do you get calls about people's gutters, like, you know, the drainage in a neighborhood, or do people understand what you do and what you know, the role you play at the state level, or do they look at you as maybe Nancy can help get my road paved? Like, what's it like?
Well, I try to help anybody who calls my office. I mean, sometimes it's more of a local issue, mm-hmm. and I'll call in my councilwoman, Liz Webb-Abear, and ask her to help. Or it might be a federal issue, and mm-hmm. I'll have to call Congressman Higgins and ask for his assistance in it. But I try to help anybody who calls, and we do get calls. Nobody you know, takes the time to say, okay, is this a local issue, a state issue, a federal issue? They just, they call the elected representative that they, you know, are most familiar with. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's my office. Sometimes it's, you know, Liz Webb Hebert's office, and sometimes it's Clay Higgins' office. But we all get calls for each other, and we mm-hmm. have a very good relationship of, you know, kind of always trying to help whoever calls.
Right.
I have been getting more calls about drainage since the flooding last year, and you know, we try to all work together to help on that issue. It's really been a tough issue, though, in the past year.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, it's just we have a lot of concern from people who flooded last August and are concerned they're going to flood again, and, you know, they want some mitigation done, and, we're, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a slow process to try to, you know, get those mitigation dollars where they need to go. And
right.
So we have, we do, mm-hmm. you know, but we try to help everybody who calls. We get, you know, calls from different people on different things. Sometimes I can't help. Sometimes uh-huh. I can.
But you know who to call. That's, you know, key. They just want to be heard.
Right, right.
I remember when I ran, it was interesting. People don't always see the lines are blurred.
Yeah.
So they don't really know local city council member
right.
from maybe a U.S., you know, House member.
Right.
And so it's just a, you know, I've got a problem, help me please.
Right.
And it's amazing. But then I think about it, you know, I didn't really know until I got more involved in the community. I knew people were something, but I didn't necessarily know what they did. You
right.
know,
and so that's why I feel like my job is to either help them or point them in the right mm-hmm. direction to help them. And I'll work closely. And that happens on all levels. We mm-hmm. all have that. So we all work really well together. And our staff all know each other, and they, you know, they're used to talking to each other and helping
right.
each other out. So,
right.
so we try to take care of everybody as best we can.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it doesn't matter if they know if it's a federal, state, or local issue. But everybody has problems that can be, you know, their elected representatives can help them sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of times people, I can help them and they don't realize that, you know, we can assist them or we can help them, and we don't get as many calls as maybe, you know, we should. And people struggle with, you know, bureaucracy, for example. I see a lot of people on social media talking about, you know, their troubles with the Louisiana Department of Revenue or
yeah.
DOTD or some other,
Office of Motor Vehicles.
You know, awful
yeah.
bureaucracy.
Uh-huh.
And so I'll put a little note, call my office, we'll try to help you, because we can sometimes help people cut through red tape and get through the bureaucracy.
Which is good to know if you've got a serious problem and you're worried about a deadline, you get a letter from the State Department, well, if you don't respond by this date,
right,
and then people try
right.
to call and they can't get through, it's
right.
stressful.
Or they're, you know, it's a mistaken identity,
right.
or they, you know,
or just a mistake
for something that they didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just it's a there are often issues uh-huh. like that where, but we're able to help people, and it's been that's mm-hmm. very rewarding. I like that part of my job, and I have a great assistant who helps me with the constituent services mm-hmm. too, because sometimes we get, you know, a high volume of calls, particularly during session. We get a lot of emails. I think my record is 5,000 emails in one day.
Oh, my goodness. And you read them all, of course.
I can't respond personally to all of them, but, you know, my, mm-hmm. my assistant does try to acknowledge everyone, and he will aggregate them and tell me, you know, this many people called and said this.
And they're
a lot
for
of times
against
they're,
something.
A lot mm-hmm. of times they're just for or against a bill, and he'll tell me, you know, how many were for and how many were against. And if they wrote a personal letter, he'll show that to me. I'll mm-hmm. see that. But, you know, I don't have time to respond to every single one personally as much as I'd like to. But
voices do count, though, like you're saying.
Absolutely.
If everybody's
absolutely.
Against an issue, you need to know about it. You know?
A lot of people think that, you know, lobbyists have a lot of influence over us, and people who make campaign contributions have a lot of influence over us. But really, there's nothing that has more influence over us than the concerns of our constituents. And that's true for everyone there, I can say. You know, when we are hearing from our constituents and they're engaged in an issue and they care about it, that is the voice that we listen to more than any other voice. And so it's really important to let your legislator know how you feel about an issue, and don't think that they don't care what you think. They absolutely do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, one of the things I would like to see is more parents engaged in the education debate, more parents involved in it, and letting their legislator know that, you know, they want an education system that is focused on their children and on the academic achievement of their children. And it's so important to let your legislator know that that's what you care about. You want it to be focused on your child, not focused on the adults in the system, but focused on your child. Yeah. And your child's success depends on it. Your yeah. child's future depends on it. It's one of the most important things to influence your child outside of the home. Your child spends so much time at school. And, you know, whether they have a good qualified teacher in the classroom and is one of the biggest indicators of success in life. And you were talking about the third and fourth grade earlier.
It's just critical at that point.
I think I saw a study once that said, you know, the quality of your fourth grade teacher can make a difference in your annual income. That's just yeah. enormous when you're grown up. And this, it was the, you know, if you had a highly rated fourth grade teacher, you made $100,000 more than other people or something like that.
I can't remember what it was, but it was
incredible.
Yeah.
And both my kids had Lisa Labarack as their fourth grade teacher, and she was awesome.
So well, good. Thank I get you, that plug
thank
in.
You, Lisa, for, you yeah. know. For making sure my children are successful in life, but you know, it's really, really important. We have some great teachers here in Lafayette Parish. We're very lucky, but some kids, you know, they're in a classroom yeah. where maybe the teacher needs some help and needs to be, you know, some professional development and some coaching and you know, we're not doing a great job of making sure that every student has the same opportunity. Every student has a good opportunity, and that's what I'll continue to work right. as long as I'm in office and even after, to make sure that that every child has an opportunity for a great education. So, and that's the nonprofit that I'm working for now. Their mission is to improve educational opportunities for all children.
Mm-hmm. Nationally, and, right.
They're a national organization. They're active in about 6 or 7 states and are just now looking at Louisiana and you know, I'm helping them map the landscape right. here and see, you know, what needs to be done here. But we have a great state superintendent in John White. He's, you know, well known throughout the country, and he's doing great things here, and he's focused our resources where they need to be focused and on our most vulnerable children. And that's why we've seen such great gains in closing the gap between minority children and white children in Louisiana. Right. In other states, you hear them say, we got our NAEP scores, which is a national test that children take to see how they're doing. And we inched up a little bit and we're doing okay, but we still have that gap between African-American kids and white kids. And in Louisiana, I'm proud to say we can say we're making progress. Overall, we're making progress, but also we're closing that gap, and we're closing it better than other states are closing it. And I shared this with you last week, I think, but on the NAEP tests, our fourth grade reading scores went from, in the 4 years, we went from 47th to 43rd overall, which was the fastest growing reading scores in the nation. And but with African American students, we went from 40th to 20th. We had a 20 slot jump from 40th to 20th. And in math, our fourth grade African-American kids went from 35th to 23rd.
That's incredible.
I mean, it's just an enormous yeah. gain for our African-American students. And that's all, I attribute all of that to John White's efforts to close that gap, and John White's vision to, you know, make sure our resources are going to help the kids who need right. it the most. And so, you know, recently our governor has been putting some effort into trying to get rid of John White, and he's hired by the State Board of Education, the BESSE Board, the Board of Elementary and Secondary Education. So the governor can't unilaterally get rid of him, but he has, you know, launched an effort to try to get him fired. And it's just astounding to me that we've had all these accomplishments under John White's leadership, and we have a governor who would want to get rid of him.
Well, I mean, he's politics, you know, are tough.
Yeah, and Superintendent White is, you know, he's a rock star in the education
around the country,
world around the country. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows who he is and is familiar what he's doing here. We were at a summit last year, an education summit, And there was a panel with three former U.S. Department of Education secretaries on it. And all three of them mentioned John White
wow.
in their presentation
yeah.
and the great things he was doing in Louisiana. And we mm-hmm. were all so proud to, you know, we're not used to hearing great things about our state. We're used to ranking at the bottom mm-hmm. of, you know, all the good polls. And we were really proud to hear that, you know, we're considered,
right.
you know, a state that's doing great things when it comes to education mm-hmm. and improving outcomes for our children.
One of the reasons I'm doing this show, Nancy, is to highlight the good things. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, you can have a stereotype that is not based in actual current fact. And so I'm glad you brought that up because there's so many good things going on here and our people want the best for each other. And I'm just so grateful for your service and what you're doing because
you.
Sometimes you do make tough decisions that I know aren't popular, but you're looking ahead at the big picture so that each child, you know, in our education system can be
Absolutely.
Treated fairly. So how do people get in touch with you? If I'm listening to this and I'm thinking I want to get in touch with Nancy Landry or any of my legislators, what's the best way to find out?
Well, you can always find me on the web. You know, that you'll just Google State Representative Nancy Landry and it'll pull up my,
your
my
contact
office information. But
uh-huh.
It's 337-262-2252 is my office number. And my email is LandryN@legis.state.la.
And I'm sure that's on the site also. Yeah.
Yes. And you can go to the you know, Louisiana legislature page and there's contact information for all of the state legislators. And not only that, but we also have a very user-friendly page that allows you to track legislation. If you're mm-hmm. interested in any legislation going through, you can you know, create a little account and it'll email you when the legislation is moving. It'll tell you when it's going to be in committee, when it's going to be voted on the floor, and give you a little history of what's mm-hmm. going on. It's really great. And people who use it have been very complimentary of how user-friendly it is and how useful it is for them to keep track of what's going on when they're interested in certain legislation. So I know we had some bills last session that had to do with child care centers and some
oh,
people
yeah.
in the child care industry were using it to track.
Uh-huh.
They also have a lobbyist there that tracks it for them, but just as, you know, people who can't make it mm-hmm. to Baton Rouge, they can, you know, kind of follow along with it. And also you can watch all of our proceedings.
You.
They're all live and they're
broadcast. So you don't have to drive. It's not driving to the Capitol,
right.
It's parking at the Capitol.
Yeah, that's probably a problem. But they're all broadcast live and they're archived, so you can pull mm-hmm. them up later. If you want to testify, you actually have to come in. You can't testify remotely, although you can send an email or a letter or whatever. But if you want to testify, you do have to come in person mm-hmm. and sign a card and, you know, swear to tell the truth and all that. So.
Yeah.
But we welcome anybody to come, you know, give their testimony. Sometimes in the education committee, we limit testimony to 2 minutes because we get so many people who come mm-hmm. And want to, you know, provide input that we have to respect the time limits. So,
right.
But you know, we do try to hear everyone and mm-hmm. we really benefit from hearing from everyone. So
right.
we
but
enjoy that.
I don't know how you have time outside of, you know, your day. I mean, do you have any hobbies or time to do things or is it all legislature and work?
I try to keep a little bit of time for myself. Now that my children are grown, mm-hmm. it's a little easier. I do garden a little bit and I love to read. And mm-hmm. so I have a book club and we're not allowed to talk about politics. This is my time away from politics. So I enjoy that. And
split up the book club over politics
yeah.
or religion. You
yeah,
know.
We just we try to keep it, you know, not work related. It's uh-huh. fun time. And then
you need that though, because I mean, you're really focused on what you do. So,
and I love yeah. working, so it's not mm-hmm. you know, I really enjoy what I'm doing. And I'm kind of sad. You know, we have term limits in Louisiana now, so I only have 2 years left.
That's it.
Yeah, it went by fast.
Oh gosh,
I got elected in the middle of a term, so I only.
Does that count? As
yeah,
one?
It counted. It counts unless it's more than a half over, mm-hmm. and it wasn't. So, I only will serve 11 years instead of 12 years, which is the limit. So it's, you know, I have a little bit of sadness going in. This will be my second to last mm-hmm. session or year. I don't know how many sessions we'll have. We've had quite a few special sessions.
Yeah, I'm thinking you'll probably be busy with monetary issues, which we don't need to get into.
Yeah, but I'm starting to think about, you know, what I'll do when I'm termed out and how I'll serve and what I'll do to make a difference. Because I want to keep, you know, I want to keep working to improve education and improve opportunities for our children. Our children are just as smart and just as capable as kids in other states.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no, just looking at the strides that have been made, showing what happens when children get the resources they need. There's no doubt that they're very capable and able to do whatever they choose to do if they get the right education.
And I'm just really hopeful that, you know, things will turn around in Louisiana and we will have a good public education system. We won't be ranked at the bottom forever.
Yeah.
So.
Well, thank you for all you do. And I'm grateful to have your friendship and the service that you give us, Nancy.
Thank you, Jan,
for
thank
that.
You. Thank you for your service, too.
You've been
great for our community as well. We appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you. I'd like to thank our producer today, William McFarland. We're taping this in the beautiful, it's really a gorgeous facility. The AOC Community Media is located in the Rosa Parks Transportation Center in downtown Lafayette. It's a beautiful place. They make this a public resource for us, and it allows me to do this show, Discover Lafayette. And so I ask people to listen to this on iTunes and like us and give comments, because it helps me perpetuate the show. And our focus with the Discover Lafayette is to highlight the many good things that go on, the people, the culture, and the places we enjoy here in Lafayette, Louisiana. So on behalf of AOC Community Media, I'm Jan Swift. I want to thank our guest, Nancy Landry, State Representative for District 31. This has been another episode of Discover Lafayette.
The views and opinions expressed on this or any program on the AOC Podcast Network do not reflect the views and opinions of Lafayette Consolidated Government, Cox Communications, LUS Fiber, AOC Community Media, its board of directors, or its staff. To learn more about becoming a community media producer, visit us on the web at aocinc.org.